This is an audio summary for your AIL 80102 course. The reading is Prediction Machines, Chapter 5, Why It's Called Intelligence, by Ajay Agrawal, Joshua Gans, and Avi Goldfarb. Back in 1956, a visionary group of computer scientists and mathematicians gathered at Dartmouth College in New Hampshire for a summer workshop. They believed, genuinely, deeply believed, that machines could be taught to think like humans. They wanted to make computers that could play games, prove mathematical theorems, form abstractions, and solve problems that were previously thought to be reserved for human minds alone. The ambition was breathtaking. They wrote to the Rockefeller Foundation asking for substantial funding. An attempt will be made to find how to make machines use language, form abstractions, and concepts, solve kinds of problems now reserved for humans, and improve themselves. We think that a significant advance can be made in one or more of these problems if a carefully selected group of scientists work on it together for a summer. They genuinely thought a summer of focused work could crack the code. It didn't. The computers of the 1950s were just too slow, the processors too weak, the memory too limited. The vision vastly outpaced the technology. Machine learning worked in small, controlled laboratory environments, but failed to generalize to the messier, noisier real world. Experts built what they called expert systems in the 1980s, basically attempts to encode human knowledge into if-then rules, but they were expensive to develop, brittle, inflexible, and fell apart the moment they encountered exceptions and edge cases they hadn't been explicitly programmed for. What followed became known as an AI winter. For decades, AI was a punchline, a field that had overpromised and underdelivered. But the winter is over. The reasons. Three converging forces that changed everything. More data than we'd ever had before, better machine learning models with greater flexibility, and faster computers with processors designed specifically for this kind of work. Researchers realized they no longer needed to prove their approach worked in theory according to mathematical axioms. They only needed to show it worked better in practice on real data. This freedom to experiment, to try things that might not be theoretically elegant, but produced results anyway, drove rapid innovation. And suddenly, with enough computing power and enough data, the neural networks and deep learning techniques that would power modern AI became viable, effective, and genuinely impressive at scale. Now let's look at what this means in practice by examining customer churn. Consider the perennial business problem of customer churn, customers leaving a service or canceling their subscriptions. In service industries like insurance, telecom, and financial services, managing churn is perhaps the single most important marketing activity. Customers are expensive to acquire, so keeping them matters enormously for profitability. For decades, the standard method was statistical regression, finding patterns in historical data to predict who might leave. Regression works by calculating conditional averages. If you know it rains more in winter than summer in Northern California, you don't just guess 29% chance of rain tomorrow. You condition that guess on whether it's winter or summer. Statisticians extended this idea to dozens, hundreds, even thousands of variables. But the problem was sheer computational complexity. Once you try to account for 7 different types of information simultaneously, you're looking at 128 different combinations. Add more variables, and the number of combinations explodes exponentially. Before machine learning, multivariate regression handled this by finding a mathematical solution that minimized prediction errors on average. It was elegant, theoretically grounded, and unbiased. It would be right on average over the long run. But as a famous statistics joke goes, that means a physicist and an engineer and a statistician could be hunting. The physicist misses by 5 feet to the left. The engineer misses by 5 feet to the right. Without firing a shot, the statistician cheers. We got it! Being unbiased doesn't mean you're actually hitting your target each time. It means that on average, across many shots, you're correct. Machine learning took a fundamentally different path. It allowed some bias in the predictions in exchange for lower variance, lower spread around the answer. It didn't require proving theoretical correctness through pure mathematics. It only required showing it worked better in practice on real data. And that practical flexibility accelerated everything. Through the 1990s and early 2000s, machine learning methods for predicting churn were mediocre. Regression still won, but the data wasn't rich enough yet, and the computers weren't fast enough. By 2004, something was changing. Duke University's Teradata Center held a data science tournament to predict customer churn. Anyone could submit, and winners received cash prizes. The winning submissions used regression models. Some machine learning methods performed adequately, but neural networks, the deep learning methods that would later drive the AI revolution, did not perform well. Then fast forward to 2016, and machine learning had clearly won decisively. Deep learning models dominated every metric. Why the dramatic shift in just 12 years? The data exploded in volume and complexity. Where a classic churn study in the 1990s used just 650 customers and fewer than 30 variables, the 2004 tournament had hundreds of variables for tens of thousands of customers. By 2016, researchers were working with thousands of variables and millions of customers. Machines could now consume hour-by-hour call records, detailed text message patterns, payment histories spanning years, and even images, not just numbers in a spreadsheet. The machines also got smarter at using the data. Modern machine learning doesn't require a human data scientist to guess which variables matter most. Instead, the algorithm can discover for itself that customers with large bills who rack up minutes early in the month behave differently from those who spend heavily late in the month. It can detect subtle patterns like certain people who pay late consistently, text a lot, and have big weekend long-distance bills are particularly likely to churn. These complex interactions are nearly impossible for humans to anticipate, but machine learning finds them naturally by sifting through millions of data points. The result? Machine learning now vastly outperforms regression at predicting churn, but churn prediction is just the beginning. The 2008 financial crisis offers a stark lesson in why this transformation matters. Ratings agencies like Standard & Poor's used regression-based models to predict that AAA-rated collateralized debt obligations, CDOs, had less than a 1 in 800 chance of failing over 5 years. They were catastrophically, spectacularly wrong. 5 years later, more than 1 in 4 CDOs failed to deliver their promised returns. The disaster cost the global economy trillions. The agencies used multiple regression models that assumed housing markets in different parts of the country weren't correlated with each other. If you lived in Las Vegas, Phoenix, and Miami, the theory went, prices moved independently. They didn't. When the housing market shockwaved, a shock to one market hit all three simultaneously. The agency's models failed because they were built on unexamined hypotheses about which variables mattered and how they related to each other. Machine learning doesn't require you to specify those hypotheses upfront. It can identify that prices in Las Vegas, Phoenix, and Miami move together, all at the same time, even if no analyst ever thought to look for that pattern. It can spot unanticipated correlations and complex interactions across the data. So why do technologists call this artificial intelligence when it's really just better statistics? Because the predictions are good enough to replace rule-based logic and hard-coded instructions. If-then statements, the traditional way computers have been programmed, collapse under complexity. Describing what a cat looks like requires specifying fur colors, fur textures, body poses, whether it's sitting or standing or jumping, whether it's indoors or outdoors, the angle of the head. It's a nightmare of edge cases. But show a machine learning algorithm millions of photos labeled cat and millions labeled not cat, and it learns to recognize the patterns without you having to specify them. The problem transforms from an algorithmic problem, what exactly are the features of a cat that I need to code, to a prediction problem, does this image resemble the cats I've seen before? This shift is profound. Jeff Hawkins, in his book, On Intelligence, argued that prediction is the foundation of human intelligence itself. Our brains are constantly making predictions about what we'll see, hear, and feel next. When predictions are wrong, we notice the anomaly, and we learn. Hawkins argues the neocortex is fundamentally an organ of prediction. The cortex is an organ of prediction, and intelligence emerges from that predictive capacity. Whether you accept Hawkins's theory entirely or not, The practical implication is clear. Machines that predict accurately are performing something we traditionally call intelligent, and those predictions have improved remarkably. The Dartmouth Conference's dream is now partially real, at least in narrower form. Prediction machines can use language, form abstractions, and concepts, solve problems once reserved for humans, and improve themselves through learning. We're not talking about human-level general artificial intelligence or the singularity or science fiction scenarios. We're talking about something narrower but still extraordinary, machines that are radically better at prediction than they were a decade ago. This matters because just as cheap arithmetic, enabled by computing in the second half of the 20th century, transformed business and society, cheap prediction will transform the 21st. For most of human history, prediction was expensive. It required experienced people thinking hard, using their intuition, working for years to develop judgment. Now it's becoming a commodity that can be purchased or built relatively quickly. The philosopher Ian Hacking noted that before the 19th century, probability was essentially the domain of gamblers and mathematicians. By the 1800s, governments applied probability mathematics to census data and the emerging social sciences. The 1900s saw physics shift from Newtonian determinism, a universe running like clockwork, to the uncertainties and probabilistic thinking of quantum mechanics. Perhaps the most important computing innovation of the 21st century is the recognition that algorithms work best not when deterministic and rule-based, but when probabilistic and data-driven. The difference between the old approach, telling a computer exactly what to do through explicit rules, and the new approach, letting it learn patterns from data, is as revolutionary as the shift from classical physics to quantum mechanics. That's not hyperbole. That's the world we're entering. Just as cheap arithmetic changed everything about how we work and organize, the coming age of cheap prediction will upend how we build systems, make decisions, and structure organizations at every level.